The Athletic.
Toby Football Show European edition. Today, Ligue 1 upset. PSG fought Delors and Delors won. But what awaits Wednesday when they take on Real Madrid? Champions League, Inter at Anfield, Ferris Bayern's day off, the worst team in Europe and the best Englishman, perhaps, ever in Serie A. All that and more coming up in this Toby Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Boom, we're back. Listen, so are you, actually, crucially. That's an interesting kind of existential question. If the listener hadn't returned, would this be happening? I don't know.
Clearly, because we've got here to do it, so...
Yeah, but if no one's there to hear it. Anyway, that's James Horncastle.
Hello.
Also with him, we've got Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, guys.
All right, Julien Laurent's with us.
Bonjour.
And Christophe Biermann's with us from the start today. Christophe.
Guten Tag.
Well, indeed. Well, indeed. Christophe, just to paint a picture of you, listener, is in front of a quite extraordinary... In fact, if you imagine the kind of library that you think Christophe would have behind him, that's what he's got. I mean, it's rammed. And not just, you know, Encyclopedia Britannica neatly arranged. I mean, those are books that have been thumbed through.
It's much better than the Raphael Honigstein's bookcase, which is usually just exposed brick and then books he's written himself.
So oh, yeah. Yeah, that's where they all ended up. Yeah,
my impression is that people tend to be to get the feeling of intimidation by this bookshelf sometimes. So
no,
not you, but others. It's like, oh, you've got so many books. Like, what's wrong with you? Or should I have more? Or whatever. Hmm. So hopefully one day we don't hang around too much on Zoom anymore and people have to think about bookshelves.
Well, I hear what you're saying. What's on your bookshelf? Can I just, you know, conclude our bookshelf?
That's all football books.
Okay. Wow.
That's all football books, yes.
Crikey. All right.
There are many more, but I don't I don't want to increase the intimidation.
Nope. Indeed not. Indeed not. Excellent. Well, we've got a lot to discuss today, including Champions League and lots of other things as well. But we like to begin, Christophe, with a moment of the weekend from everybody in association with our friends at Paddy Power. Perhaps you'd like to lead us off with your moment of the weekend.
My moment of the weekend is connected with the winning goal of Stuttgart against Borussia Mönchengladbach. They were 2-0 down and were winning in the end 3-2 after a goal from Sasa Kalajdzic. And they had 9 games without a win. And their last win was on the 11th of December. So it was a long time for them to tell you stories that you're maybe not as bad as you think and that you're unlucky, but then it's week in, week out, and you only get a draw here and a defeat there. And it was, in fact, a fantastic performance by Stuttgart. So it was actually the game everybody was waiting for in Stuttgart, turning it round and so on. And afterwards, and that is more of the moment of the weekend, I was talking to Thomas Hitzlsperger, who is the CEO of Stuttgart now, and he said, you won't believe it. It feels so good. It feels as if you've won the championship. And the thing is, I mean, he knows what he's talking about because he has actually won the German championship in 2007 with Stuttgart as a player. And when they were winning, he was scoring in the decisive game. He was scoring a decisive hammer goal, hits the hammer goal. And he was actually deeply moved by what was going on in Stuttgart. And I think a lot of the Stuttgart people felt the same. So that was very much my moment of the weekend.
That was the entire weekend, actually, by the sound of it, Christoph. Encyclopedic. Jules, what stood out for you?
It has to be, as you mentioned already in your intro, Nice and Christophe Galtier doing again against PSG. Guiri, no, he va centre deuxième poteau. Delors! Andy Delors! La demi-volée! Tout seul! Pleine lucarne! Andy Delors! He has the winning recipe, or certainly the not losing recipe, when it comes to playing the Parisians. And Nice and Galtier did it again. They won 1-0 right at the end in what was not the best of games, let's put it that way, especially from PSG.
No Mbappe. No Kylian Mbappe. All right, we'll talk more about PSG much more soon enough. Alvaro, your moment of the weekend?
Yeah, I could go with Cadiz winning at home for the first time since May, but I think that I'm going to stick to an individual here, Joao Felix. He scored twice in the win of Atletico against Betis, and it was a very meaningful win because now Atletico is fourth at the expense of Betis. But not only Joao Felix scored two goals, but after the game he embraced a motto that Simeone himself could have accomplished. He said, "We have to tighten our ass to win the game." And probably Simeone was not only proud about the two goals of Joao Felix, but about the cholismo that Joao Felix exuded, at least for a sentence.
All right. Crikey. And James, follow that.
Well, I know you are sceptical about this, James, but I am going to follow it. Now, when Tammy Abraham scored his 20th goal of the season in all competitions for Roma at the weekend, in a win against Atalanta, fans in the Curva Sud claimed to see a comet pass over the Stadio Olimpico. Now, you said that's not a comet, it's flying too low. So what could it be? Could it be a UFO? I mean, we have seen UFOs at Serie A games before, famously in the 1950s, Fiorentina Pistoiese. So we don't know what it is, but the truth is out there, James.
All right. Fiorentina Pistoiese, that was the game. It's not that they were so shocked by what they saw that, you know. Yeah, it is. It's a bizarre video that you showed me of this luminous object traversing the sky above the Stadio Olimpico. To me, it doesn't seem comet-like. Not for me. But there isn't another explanation out there. Unless, listener, you have one. Anyway,
Jose Mourinho now has two wins in a row, and I mean, probably the last time that happened, a comet flew over whatever stadium.
Possibly so. All right. Well. Much to discuss, as I say, we're going to kick things off with the Champions League.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
Tuesday, Champions League sees Liverpool facing Inter at Anfield. They're 2-0 up from the first leg, while Bayern host Salzburg 1-1. From the game in Salzburg. Wednesday, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain. Paris with the one goal lead. And for fans of Jeopardy, why not tune into Man City Sporting? Just the 5-0 lead for Man City there. We start with Tuesday's games. Liverpool Inter, James Horncastle. Only one team in Champions League history has ever come back from a two goal deficit in the first leg at home to advance. Do you know who it was? Anybody? Jules?
And no, I don't. Sorry.
Oh, Jules!
Such a.
It was Manchester United in 2018-19. But anyway, is that going to happen?
Signed
this time?
The thing. The Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Signed that thing.
That thing, yeah. So, is that going to happen this time? What do you think, James?
Well, I'm curious about the statistics on this because Klopp has just done his press conference as we speak and he said 2-0 is the most dangerous scoreline. And we know that our friend Raphael Honigstein would push back quite strongly against that. I don't think he believed there was a statistical grounding for it. I can't remember exactly what it is. But is it going to happen? Look, Inter have nothing to lose. They are champions of Italy. They did just score 5 goals, albeit against the bottom of the table, Salernitana. I think it was encouraging that the strikers who didn't take chances in the first leg did score on Friday night. Lautaro Martinez scored a hat-trick. Edin Dzeko scored a brace. The problem that Inter have is Nicolò Barella, their leading assist provider. And the guy who's really replaced Lukaku in Lautaro's eyes is the guy who gets the most out of him. He is still suspended. And how costly that kind of rash reaction he had against Eder Militao was in that final inconsequential game against Real Madrid on match day six is proving now to be. But yeah, Inter also playing against a certain team called Liverpool at Anfield, where Liverpool haven't lost since March last year, more than a year, when they lost to Fulham. The last Italian side, well, the last side in the Champions League to beat them was 18 months ago. That was Atalanta at Anfield. But again, it was a group stage game in which I think Liverpool had already secured passage to the knockout stages. So it will be very challenging, and it will have to be a truly epic night in the history of Inter for them to overcome Liverpool.
All right, you've just been talking to Inter ahead of this game, no? There was a message, I imagine, of positivity. Anything specific they were saying?
Well, I got to speak to Alessandro Bastoni, their young centre-back, Italy international, who was part of their Euro-winning squad and will succeed Chiellini and Bonucci in a year or so's time. And what struck me about Bastoni was how he was really looking forward to the game. You know, he was saying, never played in a round of 16 before. It's new to us, but that's exciting. Can't wait to play at Anfield. Already played against Salah, obviously, in the first leg, but I've played against Vinicius. I played against Benzema as well. So, you know, I really look forward to kind of measuring myself. And he seemed confident. I think, and that confidence isn't necessarily from this belief that they can qualify, but confident that they've got nothing to lose, so why not go for it? And yeah, his attitude was striking. I was I made this mistake before the first leg of saying that Inter were the underdogs on BBC Five Live, and Ashley Young, the former Inter player, was there, and he was like, Inter will not see themselves as underdogs. They are champions of Italy. And you can see that, yeah, it is a group of winners. So, yeah, look, do I expect them to go through? I think it's improbable, but they played very well for 70 minutes in the first leg. They could have easily been in the lead before Liverpool scored with their first shot on target. Remember Calhanoglu hit at the bottom of the bar. Skriniar had a chance from a corner, which was very similar from the one that Liverpool scored their goal. So I do think they have actually drawn some confidence from that. So hopefully we get a very good game.
All right. They might win this game. The idea of them going through, particularly without Barella, whose return made such a difference against, admittedly, bottom of the table, Salernitana. It does seem like a bit of a long shot. Well, we'll hear more about Inter, who briefly retook the lead in Serie A with that 5-0 win over Sassuolo, but then lost it again on Sunday night. But we'll talk more about the Serie A title race later on. But also on Tuesday night, FC Bayern against Red Bull Salzburg. Christoph, about a month ago, do you remember when FC Bayern went to promoted Bochum? Of course you do, and lost 4-2, and you said, yes, sometimes Bayern can take a day off. Since then, they've been a little bit on, I'm not sure if it's a sabbatical exactly, or lockdown furlough measures, or what. We're getting a lot of these results. They had a draw with Red Bull in the Champions League. They beat Greuther Fürth. They had a narrow win over Frankfurt. And this weekend, another draw at home to Bayer Leverkusen.
Sometimes they take full days off, like in Bochum. Sometimes they switch off during matches, like they did against Leverkusen. They had tremendous first 30 minutes. Then they got the equalizer from the first own goal in the career of Thomas Müller.
Bereit mit links, wie gesagt, Richtung Tor. Ulle und dann das Eigentor. Ulle hätte ihn, da hat die Kommunikation nicht gestimmt.
And after that, they were like, for 15 minutes or so until the halftime break, they had a lot of problems. Bayer Leverkusen had many chances to score a second goal. And in the second half, it was okay again. And that's something, especially before the match against Salzburg, and probably the ongoing matches or coming matches in the next rounds of the Champions League, is how often do they switch off in big games? And because they can do it in the Bundesliga, they still have a big lead, and nobody expect them to throw it away. But in the Champions League, you can't do that. And Julian Nagelsmann was saying, we shouldn't always talk about the end of the world when we have bad moments, and we shouldn't paint it too black and blah, blah, blah. And but I think there is this feeling of doubt maybe creeping in that this season they might not be up to the top, really.
Yeah, only two wins, though, in their last five in all competitions, which is unusual even for a team that might lose concentration from time to time. Is it anything to do with Sven Ulreich being in goal instead of Manuel Neuer? Or are there other issues?
I think when we talk about the Bundesliga, maybe it's because there is not enough pressure coming from the competitors. It's easier to take a day off than usually. But when we look at the last years, they didn't have it. I mean, they were 10, 11, 12 points clear of the second, and their performance was still terrific. And yes, Manuel Neuer's absence might play a role. Also, Leon Goretzka is missing for quite a while. Alfonso Davies is not in, so there are some serious options for Julian Nagelsmann not there. Tolisso will be out also against Salzburg. But I think they are soul searching themselves a bit. I mean, I think they don't know actually what the problem is, and to what extent it is a problem. And but maybe we already see it tomorrow against Salzburg. Still, Bayern for me is a huge favourite, but
right. Well, they have Lewandowski. He was quiet in the first leg, but that was only his second game in which he's failed to score in his last seven in the Champions League. He's on 9 goals for the competition anyway, so that's a pretty useful weapon to have up your sleeve. As for Red Bull, I want to pronounce his name correctly. Their manager's name, Christoph.
Matthias Jeisler.
That's right, yeah. I saw that he was posting record numbers. Bayern, of course, are favourites. But after that 1-1 draw, which it took a late Kingsley Coman equaliser in the first leg, we could see a major upset here, no?
Yeah, they had the equaliser pretty late in the game, in 90th minute or so, but it was fully deserved. Luckily, they got a draw or so. They were, especially in the second half, they were putting Salzburg immensely under pressure. So that was a okay performance, but already there in Salzburg, they took some time off.
If I wanted to watch an upset this Tuesday, Alvaro, which game should I watch? The Anfield game or the Munich match?
It is unlikely that Salzburg is going to knock out Bayern. Really do.
Which is less likely?
I think that Inter beating Liverpool is as unlikely as Salzburg beating Bayern, in my opinion. I cannot really put them in an order. I think that both are very unlikely. But what I wanted to say is that Bayern were scoring a lot of goals this season, and this is something that worries me a little bit. They scored only 9 in the last 5 games, and in the previous 5, they had scored 16. I think that there is a pattern in there. And Bayern played this weekend with Musiala, with Coman, with Müller, with Lewandowski. I think that the other striker was Gnabry, even though I'm not too sure. And yet they only scored 1 goal. And this is not very normal in Bayern. We are all used to seeing Bayern making mistakes defensively, especially if Neuer is not there, with Ulreich in goal. But them not scoring so many goals is something new, that they have stopped scoring so many goals.
Yeah, and when you look at the numbers, so when you look at, for example, at the expected goals they had against Leverkusen, I think it was 1.9 or so. So they could have won more, but their numbers were higher in the previous matches. That's very true. But still, I mean, is this a pattern? Is a sample size too small? We have to see. The match tomorrow could be more interesting than a lot of people expect.
All right. Excellent. That's Tuesday evening. While we have you on, Christoph. Should mention Hoffenheim moving into the top four, although it's very tight there with RB Leipzig and Freiburg, three teams separated by just 2 points. But down the other end, Hertha Berlin continued their disastrous season. They are now third from bottom, so in the relegation playoff spot. A 4-1 defeat at home to Eintracht Frankfurt this weekend. That's their fourth loss in a row. And I see that there was a table published in Germany on Sunday morning, which effectively says that they are the least successful team in all of Europe's top five leagues, Hertha.
Is that so?
Yeah.
They look like, I can tell you, they look like. I mean, it's, right now they by far the worst team in the Bundesliga. So when you look at the form of the team, so we talked about Stuttgart playing an excellent match and also Fürth, who are doomed to go down, but they play very solid football over the last weeks. But Hertha has completely lost the plot. So a lot of people are expecting that they change their manager again. Typhoon Korkut is now in charge. But I think we have to talk about them in weeks to come.
Okay. All right. While we still have the chance, Hertha, whose new ownership had announced bold plans to get into the Champions League within 5 years, all that kind of Blackburn Rovers-esque posturing, and instead they're heading in a very different direction. Yeah, last nine games, 2 points won and a goal difference of minus 18, the least successful side in all of Europe's top five leagues over that period. All right, well, Christoph, many thanks for joining us today. Next up, we move on to Wednesday's Champions League action. Ooh.
So, Mr. Ranić, what's troubling you? Well, we've got a leak in the dressing room, Doctor. Right, and you want to find out who it is? No, I just can't find a good plumber.
Sometimes there's only so much you can do, but with Paddy Power, our offers are watertight. So this weekend, get money back as a free bet if one leg of your 4+4 bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power! Pre-match online bet builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Wednesday, Real Madrid taking on Paris Saint-Germain. It's a big one, this. Paris Saint-Germain 1-0 up, of course, from the first leg. Do PSG have any history with being ahead against Spanish sides and Czechs notes? I'm sure there was something.
Can't find anything either. Can't remember.
They just bought all their players, though, didn't they? That's how they reacted. They said, we'll take your best players.
That's what we do.
Well, it might happen to you. It might happen to you, Jules, because, of course, it was Kylian Mbappe who made the difference in the first leg with that brilliant run, or at least I thought it was brilliant. I seem to remember you thought it was actually fairly ordinary. But
no, it was good. It was good.
And, of course, a lot of people are predicting that he will be in Madrid come next season. Will he be in Madrid, though, this Wednesday? Because there's a late injury scare, Jules.
Very late and very big scare, because he got injured this morning at training, which is so typical. You know, you English people have the Spursy expression. I feel like in French we need to have a similar one for PSG, because it seems like they have this history of, before big games, especially in the Champions League, well, very often in the Champions League, having these kind of issues. Remember last season, Kylian got injured before the second leg against Manchester City away in Manchester. He was in the stands, but clearly not ready on... not capable of playing. So he sat next to me behind closed doors, literally the seat next to me
the
whole game and watched his team lose.
Yeah, no, I have to ask you, how was that for you? Was it a bit uncomfortable because you were sat next to Kylian and on one hand you wanted to talk to him, but on the other hand you didn't want to disturb him? Or was he always pestering you for your opinion? Or how did it work?
No, the worst was I was the pitch side reporter for French TV. So everything I was saying,
yes,
all the PSG bench could hear. So if I was saying like, oh, Kylian's mum is fat and ugly, which she isn't, by the way, I just want to put that out. Right. He would have heard. He was literally like, I don't know, like literally the seat next to me.
Right.
So I felt a bit like, come on, you can't say any BS or anything wrong. You don't be at your best.
Normally you would just say whatever came into your head, but on this occasion.
Yeah, you know, we talk about Kylian's mum and stuff like that. Not this time.
Not this time.
Not this time.
It's just a hip flexor, surely. No,
it's part of his contract. Right now. He won't appear
he's
in the
in
game.
Portugal. Yeah, he's in Portugal right now. So maybe there's something with hips lately. Hips don't lie, as obviously Shakira would say. So
maybe these ones do, though. We don't know.
Maybe those hips lie. Who knows, eh? In this case, it's more of a foot problem.
Right.
But the MRI says it's not broken, which I guess is a positive in the situation. But it looks quite pessimistic now. And I think without Kylian, as we will see when we analyze the Nice defeats at the weekend, it's a very, very, very different team.
Well, that was your opinion. It was also the opinion of Christophe Gauthier, the Nice manager, that there's two PSGs, one with Kylian and one without. The 1-0 defeat, yet another of the successes that Gauthier has had over PSG, as you say. James was saying that you rang him up irate early on Sunday morning at PSG's performance. Why were you berating James for that?
He provokes me all the time because he texts and says, like, poach out. And I was like, I don't need his message. I'm fuming already.
Right.
And I just think, like, we go back to the same thing. Yeah, the first leg was really good against Madrid, helped by the fact that Carlo got a lot of his tactics wrong and Benzema was not fully fit and all of that. But apart from that game, the rest has been so average from a PSG point of view, from Pochettino in what he's trying to build. I'm not even sure he's trying. For whatever he's doing, it's not happening. And Saturday night was bad, like really bad.
How bad?
I mean, not just Gini Wijnaldum, who touched the ball 9 times in the first half, 28 times in total, which is an absolute shocker. But as a collective, it was just so poor.
Jules, why doesn't this impact all these reports that, you know, United want Pochettino? Have United not been following what Pochettino has been doing, or do they not even care?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. We remember we had that debate back in the fall when there were all those big rumours, more than rumours, about him going to United when Solskjaer has just been signed before Rangnick was appointed. And a lot of people were saying, but like, don't the United hierarchy, I mean, Woodward was still there at the time, Richard Arnold, John Murta, the Glazers, everybody, don't they have BT or Canal Plus or Beans, like, you know, Amazon? Mm.
Right.
Are they not watching the PSG game? Because if they were...
No. But isn't there a Thomas Tuchel kind of factor in this? I mean, he was...
They were playing better.
They were playing better, but I think if you can have Thomas Tuchel, who's done so wonderfully at Chelsea...
True.
...struggling at PSG and even getting fired by the club, it kind of makes you feel that maybe the issue isn't the manager, you know?
Completely. Mm. And that's a valid point too. And I know that... Poch and Poch's people are saying to United, or said to United, or will say to United, it's not our fault. He's the club. It's impossible to manage that dressing room. It's a club full of politics, which is all true.
United is so well run. United have no parallels with this situation.
Exactly. But it seems that his stake is still really high. So good for him. Right. I don't want to wish him bad. I'm just saying I'm disappointed by what he's doing so far in Paris. That's all.
Okay. Well, what do you think about Wednesday night? Are you expecting a big game from Leo Messi? Are you expecting him to really unleash his full messiness on this? Possibly his last really big game of the season.
Especially now.
The problem, it's not so much especially now, no. The problem is he has become a creator. He's always been a great creator, of course, but he was a great creator and an incredible striker, a finisher, if you want, before. Now the finish bit has gone because he's not as good as he used to be, and he's certainly not as quick on the first 5 or 10 yards than he used to be. And he doesn't dribble as much as well as he used to be. So he's become far more of a creator than he used to. The problem is, if Mbappe is not there, no one runs, no one has the ball in behind, no one... So there's all those calls are not there. If you look at the game against Saint-Étienne, for example, where he gives those two amazing assists to Mbappe, all the movement comes from Leo and Mbappe together. The other 9 players or 8 outfield players are just not moving or not much moving. So if you take Mbappe out of the equation, Messi is gonna put his head up and sees the game like nobody else, literally as a chase game. But if no one's moving, and that was the problem against Nice, is that everything was in feet. Neymar wanted the ball in his feet. And Messi wanted the ball in his feet. Di Maria wanted the ball in his feet, apart from the chance he had in the first half and the half one he had in the second half. So if there's no movement, Messi, as great as he is still, I just fear he won't have enough impact on the game. It's really worrying if Kylian doesn't play.
Would you even, if you were picking the team, Jules, if you were managing PSG for Wednesday's game, would you have Messi in the side, given the tactics that you might want to use?
Oh, yeah. No, he's still amazing. It's amazing. It's just his game has evolved, but it's normal. It's just. I think it's the natural evolution of his game at 34 years old and in a team that is not really functioning properly and when he's not as amazing as he was for all those years. So, of course, you have to start him. I mean, he's your only hope, really, with Neymar to a certain extent, and then being strong defensively and try not to concede. Because if Kylian cannot start and it looks like he could be in the squad, but not fit enough to start maybe, then it's going to be very, very complicated for them.
The thing, James, is that Messi is a victim of his own standards as well. I believe, for example, that he's been every possible good player in one. I mean, and his career cycle has been so long that he started playing maybe like Garrincha, then he became someone like Maradona, then someone like Di Stefano, and now he's something more like Lothar Matthäus, maybe Platini, I don't know, a player that we would have rated a lot on his own if he didn't have this past behind him. The thing that Lionel Messi at some point in 2012, 2015, around that time, he became all those four players, all those four legends that I mentioned, together in one player. So he set some standards that they are unattainable, unachievable for the man anymore.
Alvaro, Real Madrid, meanwhile, who have exited the competition at this point in two of the last three additions and are a goal behind here. How confident are you about their prospects? They had a big win this weekend against Real Sociedad.
I still have some belief in Real Madrid. I know that they were very poor against PSG. Probably Ancelotti got it wrong, but I want to praise PSG as well because I think that they played very well a month ago against them. I think that one of the problems with Real Madrid is going to be very similar to the problem Ancelotti had in the reverse fixture. There are a number of players who are not fit, and Ancelotti could play them or not. I'm talking about Toni Kroos, who is still kind of in the sidelines, but he could feature if Ancelotti considered that necessary. And he did the same thing with Benzema in the Parc des Princes, and that didn't work, not only because Benzema didn't get a lot of balls, a lot of supply from the midfielders, but also because Benzema wasn't fully fit. I think that Ancelotti for this game should go for energy, for a more caffeinated team. I think that against Real Sociedad, for example, with Camavinga in the team, you could see that, apart from scoring a good goal, and for all the flaws that Camavinga still has and Ancelotti refers to, he offers a lot of energy, and that is very good. And in a game against PSG, maybe you need players like Fede Valverde, like Camavinga, not only they are fast, but also they are like rapacious in the box. I mean, they are trying to shoot every time they can, but they also track back, they do defensive runs when PSG has the counterattacks, if they have any. So I think that if Ancelotti goes for the energy, maybe this can shock PSG a little bit. Toni Kroos, as I said, he could play, but he's right now unlikely to feature. Casemiro is out of the game. Ferlan Mendy is a massive absentee for Real Madrid. So maybe Real Madrid will play with a makeshift midfielder of Valverde, Camavinga, Modric, something like that. And I think that this could work in their favour, as strange as it sounds, because at least they will have a lot of energy.
Real Madrid have lost 9 of the last 10 knockout games that they played when they lost the first leg. So that's me trying to be optimistic.
All right.
The only time I think was Wolfsburg in 2016 when Cristiano scored a hat-trick on the second leg after losing 2-0 at home, 2-0 away the first leg or something like that. So they don't do it often, but I guarantee they'll do it on Wednesday.
Going to be quite a game. you're going to be tuning in for that one, James. How do you call it? What do you think?
Well, I was very disappointed by Real Madrid in the first leg. It's one of the most un-Real Madrid-like performances I think I've ever seen. In terms of, they played like a small team. They played like Alcorcón or something like that, in terms of how they sat back, weren't even able to counter. I just think that would be unacceptable at the Bernabeu. So it has to be a completely different Real Madrid. I mean, if Kylian isn't playing, then they've got a chance. And it's just bizarre to say that, given that the opponent has Messi and Neymar. And I take the point that, Messi is maybe no longer what he was, but this season, okay, at the Champions League, you know, he has delivered, but I don't think anyone expected this season at PSG to be so unproductive in terms of goals and assists. And I'm not being L'Equipe there, giving him 2 out of 10. But I think even if he was just a little bit off what he was at Barcelona, you know, we would be talking about a guy who's top of the league on scoring charts, scoring hat tricks against Rans and, you know, Mets and this sort of thing. And okay, those standards are on the table, but I expected more. So in that case, you know, I mean, I wouldn't rule Madrid out. So yeah, let's see. Mm.
This could be the game where he brings all
it
of that.
It could be.
It could be, because it's his last chance, I think, this season.
I want to see, actually, how he will play. Jules was explaining that, you know, Messi gets the ball, looks in front of him, and if Mbappé is doing the right run, he's passing the ball at him. But if Mbappé doesn't play, I wonder if this will make Messi assume more responsibilities. Maybe we see a less altruistic version of himself. I know that physically he cannot offer that anymore, but, you know, if he's closer to the box, taking more shots, you know, I would like to see if Lionel Messi understands that maybe the scoring responsibility now will rely on him if Neymar is not at his best.
It's a huge game. It's coming up on Wednesday. Ooh, it's not the only big game coming up on Wednesday in Europe. We've also got a couple of Europa League matches. We'll check out the Europa League last 16 next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which is excellent news for Everton fans when they make their Lampardian transition from serious to funny to serious once again. Pre-match bet builders only, get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4+ legs, maximum free bet is £10. Excludes enhanced match odds, online exclusives and T's and C's apply.
Europa League last 16 features Lyon at Porto. Not an easy place to go, Jules. Still, Lyon are in form. They just had a 4-1 win over Lorient.
Yeah, in form is a bit strong, James, because they, as we say, almost every week, in the sense that they're up and down. They've been up and down all season with Peter Bosch, capable of a really good performance like they did on Friday, and they were really good. And then being abject the 3 days later in whatever other competition or game they play. And Porto, I don't think, have lost at home since December in the Champions. That was in the Champions League, but since then I think it's 15 games in a row or something crazy. So
yeah,
they look good against Paços de Ferreira at the weekend.
4-2.
Four goals, Evanilson, Taremi. I think this one is really going to be fascinating because Lyon on their day are really, really good. But when they're not good, they're not good at all. And you easily create chances, score goals, you know, all of that. We've seen it this season in Ligue 1 so many times. So it's a really hard one to call. I mean, the first leg, I think you go away with the home side. But over the two legs, I do think that they've got really a decent chance of doing this one. But again, you can't make any mistakes or anything like that.
The other Europa League last 16 first leg on Wednesday is Real Betis against Eintracht Frankfurt. Christoph's Eintracht Frankfurt. Why are there two games on Wednesday? What's going on there? Does anybody know?
I think Sevilla and Betis cannot play a game in the same day in the city.
Right. For, well, they could have had them home and away.
Security reasons.
I see. Yeah, okay, what about Real Betis? They got beat at the weekend. You mentioned this earlier, Alvaro, by Atletico, but they are still fighting in, what, three fronts? Good Lord, they're through to the Copa del Rey final as well, aren't they? Which is also in Seville. What's going on?
They are. And of course, the Europa League final is in Sevilla. So, you know, they've got plenty of fronts open up for them. In front of them, the season looks succulent for them. I think that it's true that you can feel that the tiredness is looming a little bit. They are going to play this season around 15 more games than last season because they are going through far in every competition. I think that they suffered a little bit against Zenit, against Rayo Vallecano in the Spanish Cup in the semifinals. They were close to going into the extra time. Fortunately for them, they got the draw and therefore the tire winning goal in the last minute of the game. But yeah, generally speaking, Betis has been a very good team. They are entertaining. I've got doubts about their defenders. I think that Bartra and Victor Ruiz don't play together very well. But then when it comes to attacking and creating football, they are one of the finest teams in La Liga.
Perfect. Jules?
Can we talk about that photo of Joaquin when Betis won Copa del Rey? Was it 17 years ago or something when he was a young player?
This just
And obviously, clearly, a lot of people in Spain were waiting for them to finally get to another final to pull out the photo again, where he's completely naked with the trophy and clearly went swimming before because we can't see much.
Oh, it's not Joaquin.
not exactly.
Not at all.
Yeah, okay. that was a small anecdote. Yeah,
I'll right. put it in the group now so everybody can see or not see in this case or look right. for.
Well,
I would describe that. Jules has just shared the picture, and I would describe that as very much a Sporting Lisbon, as in nothing to see really between the two legs. But but yeah. Anyway, so they're taking on Eintracht Frankfurt to try and keep this succulent season going. Also, in the Europa League last 16, Atalanta against Bayer Leverkusen. Atalanta beaten at the weekend by Roma, a rotten run of form. Barcelona taking on Galatasaray. Rangers against Red Star. Sevilla against West Ham. Ooh. And, well, would have been Leipzig, but they are already through to the quarterfinals because they would have been up against Spartak Moscow, who have been rightly thrown out of the Europa League, as have all Russian sides. Pick a game out of those that you'll be interested in on Thursday. What about Sevilla-West Ham? Sevilla goalless at the weekend against Alaves, now 8 points back from Real, so they're not going to win the title. Is it all on this game for Lopetegui?
A little bit, yeah, I would say that. I think that Sevilla, this weekend, we got to know that Sevilla will probably not win the title and that the old guard is back. Because Barcelona and Atletico, they are already in the Champions League positions. And Sevilla, I think that they are a victim of their own cautiousness. Because I don't think that it's not in Lopetegui to go away and pursue a victory away in every ground. And this is exactly what Sevilla needs to win the league. So for this tire, I would say that if Sevilla doesn't wrap it up in the first leg, which is very difficult because they've got many players in the sidelines, then maybe West Ham has a big chance, because Sevilla away from home, they calculate too much, they play with a handbrake on, they are constantly just thinking about not getting too carried away, not attacking too much, and I think that to win the Europa League in certain scenarios, and the West Ham ground is one of them, maybe you need to be a little bit more daring, because if you stay in your own box defending, well, West Ham has really dangerous players who can score. So that could be a very bad business for Sevilla. So they'd better do a good job in the first leg, because otherwise they are going to suffer.
Okay, all right then. James, a game?
Well, I watched the extended highlights of Leverkusen against Bayern, and I must say, quite worried for Atalanta on the showing that Leverkusen put in, particularly first half, because, you know, were they not so profligate in front of goal, you know, they could have won that game 2-3-1. And they've got some very bright, electric forward players. Adli in particular was clearly in good form at the weekend. Florian Wirtz is one of the most exciting talents, you know, to come out of Leverkusen. They do keep creating them. So, you know, even with Schick, who's been out injured for a long time and would have been perhaps playing an Italian team he knows well, they look like an interesting proposition. I think Gasperini in the Roma game at the weekend, you know, I mean, he didn't play any strikers for an hour. Yeah, just played a team of midfield players. And, you know, I wonder if he did have Thursday's game in mind, because I think there's still a belief that Atalanta can do something in this competition with Muriel, with Boga, with players like that. So in some respects, kept his powder a little bit dry. So I think, you know, I mean, if Atalanta play to their potential, which has been difficult in light of the injuries and the sales that they've had to make. I say had to make, they didn't have to make, but Gosens ultimately went in January. Then two very exciting teams, two teams that aren't known for defending particularly well, two teams that are known for scoring. So, yeah, it could be a very exciting game.
Nice one. Jules, let's not forget the Conference League.
Yeah, the greatest club competition of all time with really good clash. No, more seriously, Leicester against Rennes, I think, would be great because certainly on the French side, they are in good form. They're scoring a lot of goals. They're a very entertaining team to watch. And the way they play, their counter-press especially has been very, very efficient. One of the best in Europe this season. And yeah, I think it's a really good test for Leicester. Really, really good. And if I was Brendan Rodgers, which I'm not, of course, I'm much taller, and the Leicester team in general, I'd be really, really like, okay, let's take this one seriously because it would be a tough game for them. Over the two legs, they might still go through because they're very talented. But the way Leicester have been defending, even against Leeds on Saturday, even if they won 1-0 and kept a clean sheet, this Rennes team can hurt you really, really quickly. So it'd be a really good game.
Jules, so sizist today. Joaquin, I don't know why. Brendan Rodgers.
I feel strong, I feel tall, I feel good, I feel big.
Good for you, Jules. Very shortly, we'll hear a little bit more about what's going on in Ligue 1, La Liga and Serie A with that extraordinary title race.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Jules, Nice are now second after that win over Paris Saint-Germain and Marseille losing. Third game in a row, they failed to win. They've only picked up 1 point in that time, Marseille. Monaco beating them this time in that South Coast derby. Ooh, crikey, Marseille have only won one of their last six home games. What are the fans doing about that?
Yeah, they were not happy. 56,000 of them at the Velodrome on Sunday night with rivalry, as you said. So the atmosphere was really, really good. They've dropped 22 points at the Velodrome this season. And we're like, they still have, I think, 7 games to play or something like that at home. It's ridiculous. I think it's the worst by far of the teams at the top of each of the big five leagues, really. Dropping 22 at home is ridiculous. They're not clicking. They can't sustain the good level. So they played a really good first half, for example, on Sunday night. Really good, even if they didn't really create big chances. But they had a lot of the ball and really were in control. And then the second half, they disappeared completely. They stopped working together. And Sampaoli could not find any answers. And Monaco, in fairness, on the second half, deserved to win. Ben Yedder was great. Jason Martin scored the goal. And Van der Sande, the young right back who arrived from Brazil in January, looked really, really good for such a young player. So well done, Monaco. But for Marseille, there's clearly something missing. And maybe it's the fact that Frank McCourt, the owner, was in town from the US. And clearly he should not, because every time he's there, they lose or they draw. So it's clearly the jinx.
I see. Down the other end of the table, meanwhile, paradoxically, AS is no longer bottom.
They're on a good run as well. I think they've unbeaten in the last six or something. Well, they lost to
PSG. Yeah, they're out of the relegation zone.
Pascal Duprat doing a great job, really, since taking over. Of all the four teams that have changed managers so far this season, he's the one doing the best. They've got belief. They play well. They're strong collectively with their back five. And they get result when it matters the most. So in those big games like this weekend, it was them against Metz. So it was like 16th against 17th or 17th against 18th, something like that. It's the game that they had to win at home. And they did. So if they keep going like this, they're going to be okay. But it's still very, very tight at the bottom for us.
Mm. All right. Bordeaux now the bottom of the pile after getting beaten 2-0 at home by Troyes. Crikey.
Yeah, they're in big trouble.
Alvaro.
Really bad.
James. I'm loving a player that I didn't know a lot about. Amin Gouiri is his name, Nice. I mean, against Versailles. He is one of the most beautiful showboats before giving an assist last week. And then he was showboating Neymar this time, and Neymar didn't like it because Neymar got from his own medicine. Probably you saw it. But he looks like a proper entertaining player. But my question to Jules is, how good can he get? Because he looks amazing, at least in highlights.
Yeah, no, he is. Not just in the little clips that you can see there and there on the technical skills. He's amazing. The amazing story about it is that he was part of the Lyon Academy, who is one of the best, obviously, in Europe. And they just didn't really believe in him for the first team, in the sense that they kept saying to him, wait, for your chance is going to come, wait. And he was bored of waiting because he knew that he was good enough already 2 years ago to play for the first team. Not every single minute of every single game, but he was clearly already good. I mean, he was smashing goals for fun with the reserve and the under-19s, with France under-19s, in the big competitions and all of that. And he was like, why are you not playing me? And they said, well, you know, we've got all those players already ahead of you. And he was like, I've had enough. So they sold him to Nice for 8 million, which was one of the worst. I know they've got a percentage on the sale. But it's crazy. When you see how good he's been, he's already on double-digit goals and assists this season and last season. He's an incredible talent where he's going to go so, so far, so high. There's just no doubt about it. And the best thing is that he's off the field as good as on the field, in the sense that his hobby is building IKEA furniture. That's what he says. So, you know, he's not going to be out partying, smoking, drinking. He builds furniture from IKEA. That's what he does. So, and I think as a country, there's a big hopes for him in the future.
Amin Gouiri, G-O-U-I-R-I. If you want to look him up on YouTube, you'll find some pretty special clips. I'm just enjoying Neymar shoving him after his showboating rainbow flick, as you say. A little bit of Neymar's own medicine.
Lambert, back out there. Kind of thing, yeah.
Crikey. Anyway, right, nice one, Alvaro. Very good. We haven't mentioned Barcelona, apart from saying that they're going to be playing Galatasaray. Their excellent form under Xavi continued this weekend. They got a 2-1 win over Elche. All looking good there, Alvaro.
It's looking good, even though this time they needed to fight in order to get the remontada, because Elche scored first, then Barcelona in the second half, they managed to turn the situation around. I think that it was, again, a display of power by Barcelona, in the sense that if they cannot win with whatever they have on the pitch, they resort to the bench and they are bringing some serious power onto the pitch again, which is something that they couldn't do in the first half of the season. But, for example, Memphis came on to play the second half, and we know that Memphis on his day is a very good player, and in fact, he scored against Elche, probably one of the best penalties I've seen this year.
Depay! Goal, 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 goal,
goal. Basically, he took one step back and he smashed the ball into the top corner. You have to watch it because he's unstoppable. You know, sometimes we don't think that penalties can be golazos, that they can be beautiful goals. I mean, he took it with such a confidence. But yes, the good thing about Barcelona is that from the bench, Xavi was able to bring some talent onto the pitch, and they changed the game completely. I like the intelligent balls at the back of the defenders. Frenkie de Jong did a lot of disruptive runs. He got a very good chance that he missed, but at least he got himself there. And I think that, you know, Barcelona is in a good position right now because they are getting a lot of confidence by winning games. And this is the best possible way. It's not somebody telling them how good you are, you have to play very well. No. Right now, they are getting the wins, and therefore they feel strong. And, you know, it is very promising, I think, what's coming up next for Barcelona, because I think that they can still fight for the second position in La Liga. Maybe they can get a good result at the Santiago Bernabeu, which could be like saying, here we are again. And then in the Europa League, probably the sky is the limit, in the sense that they are better than Galatasaray, then they will be in the next round, and I think that they will be dangerous, yes.
How many points between them and Sevilla? Because they've moved up to third in the meantime.
It's a 7-point difference, but Barcelona has a game in hand.
Ah, interesting. All right.
Yes.
Of course, if it's tight, end of seasons, year after, you can't say fairer than Serie A, where the lead has changed hands three times in the past 10 days or so. It was Napoli last Sunday, then Inter took over the top. Now it's Milan who are in first place after beating Napoli Sunday night. Poi che si respinge per Calabria, il tiro alla rete, ha segnato il Milan, Olivier Giroud. Milan, we're not altogether always convincing, have now managed to defeat both Inter and Napoli in the space of a month, with Olivier Giroud, Jules, doing the damage.
Amazing.
It is
such
amazing.
An intelligent goal, James, didn't it? Like the way, I mean, Calabria was clearly shooting, but he was alert and, you know, not on his heel, on his toes, and finished well.
Was it
like
his
the goal he scored in the derby?
Yeah, was it the goal? Was it the leg that had had a bit knocked out of it as well? Was it the leg that got
I think he's the right ankle that was bleeding on the Koulibaly challenge, and he scored with the left, I think, but maybe we need to check.
Okay, anyway, there you go. Milan top. But 10 games to go, and they are what? 2 points above Inter and 3 of Napoli. So a ways to go as they chase their first Scudetto since 2011. What do you think, James? Was this a decisive chapter in the title race, at least perhaps from Napoli's point of view?
Well, Spalletti had said before the game that we'd either be quickly forgotten or remembered forever. And it was actually quite sad to hear Lorenzo Insigne kind of pick up on that after the game and said, we will be quickly forgotten.
Did he say that?
Yeah, they were pretty disconsolate, as you can imagine. Yeah, from the euphoria of winning late last week against Lazio, where all of a sudden that belief in Napoli winning the Scudetto surged. This really brought them back down to earth. I thought Milan were the better side. I thought Pioli got his tactics spot on, playing a 4-3-3, 4-1-4-1 for the first time this season. Benacer and Kessie a little bit higher than they've been playing. And then Giroud has been deciding the big games for them. You know, Jules mentioned his two goals in the comeback against Inter in the Derby della Madonnina, scored against Roma. And, you know, if this season were to come down to games against the top six, Milan have got the best record of any team. What's let them down has been their performances. I say performances, their results against teams in the bottom half of the table. Your Spezias, your Salernitanas. Some refereeing has let them down on occasion. But I think they've got a very good balance, Milan, of players who are young, start of their careers, who've got no fear. Teo Hernandez has played for Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. So he's got very good pedigree of playing under pressure for big clubs at his age. Leao just doesn't seem to care what he's playing. He's just got fantastic kind of carefree nature about him. And then you've got these guys like Giroud, who've been there, done it, won World Cups, won European trophies. Zlatan, who can come off the bench and play 2 minutes for the first time in 2 months. Doesn't really matter whether he plays or not, because Milan just get the job done. But I think if they win the title, James, it will ultimately come down to whether they can put away these teams in the bottom half of the table.
Right. Among the many stars on display Sunday night in Naples, Ficao Tomori as well.
Tomori was outstanding against Osimhen, one of the most talked about and hyped strikers. Be remiss not to mention his centre-back partner as well, Pierre Kalulu. Kalulu, who was signed by Milan's chief scout, ex-Monaco, as were a lot of these players. Yeah, Maldini and Massara get all the credit, but Geoffrey Moncada has done phenomenal work for Milan. And Kalulu, I mean, to get him for nothing, I mean, I think Lyon were pretty annoyed.
it's a Guiri type of signing again, to be fair.
Yeah. And so he was great. And I think one of the interesting aspects to that is Milan have, since the January transfer window closed, they've had more talks with Sven Botman's representatives and agents. And I think there's still a desire to do a deal for him. But if they didn't, it wouldn't be the end of the world, I don't think, because Kalulu has been fantastic. And I think Tomori, best English centre-back at the moment, on form.
Meanwhile, he's kind of fellow growing up on the streets of playgrounds of South London, buddy Tammy Abraham, also in Serie A. I guess you could make a case that he's the best English striker at the moment. Certainly that's what the numbers say. Isn't that right, James? After he reached 20 goals for this season, this weekend for Roma.
Yeah, and it could have been more. I mean, you think of that middle section of the kind of autumn winter when he was so unlucky, you know, he hit the woodwork so many times, you know, kind of goals called off for offside. And he's had a great first season. To be in 20 goals in all competitions in a new country, new club, where his strike partner's often changed. You know, they have settled on it being Zaniolo when Zaniolo's not suspended or injured. But, you know, before it was Mkhitaryan, it's been Shomurodov as well. Yeah, that's not easy, really. And that is a very difficult place to go and play your football. I'm not just talking about Serie A, I'm talking about Rome. The pressure. And he's taken it all in his stride. He seems to just love playing for that team. And so, yeah, I mean, in terms of goals scored, yeah, he's definitely up there. I mean, Kane has put in some masterclass performances in recent weeks. You know, you think about the City game and the Leeds game. But again, yeah, Tammy should be absolutely at the forefront of Gareth Southgate's thoughts for his next squad.
I'm trying to remember as well, the goal this weekend settling Roma's pretty massive in terms of importance victory over Atalanta, their rivals for a potential top four spot. This victory coming as their previous one had, with Jose Mourinho sat on the coach watching on his laptop because he was suspended. But I was trying to remember the last time that an English player had reached those kind of goal numbers. I can't think of a striker, an English striker certainly, having that kind of impact.
No, I mean, even in the heyday in the 80s and 90s, you know, I mean, yeah, the only kind of top English striker to go out there was Mark Hately, wasn't it, with Milan. I mean, Alan Shearer, I think, had an opportunity to go to Juventus and didn't go at a time when, you know, the likes of Battistuta and it was in his pomp. Mm.
Cragnotti wanted to sign Michael Owen with other people's pension money, you know, that kind of thing.
But, I mean, even if you go back to the kind of 60s and 70s, I mean, Jimmy Greaves didn't stick around long enough at Milan to really carry on the goal-scoring record that he had. Mm. Dennis Law, yeah, the same. Torino, though Dennis Law is Scottish, of course. So no, I mean, you're probably going to have to go back to the kind of pre-Serie A beginning of the 20th century, you know, when there were James Richardson Spensleys kicking about and William Garbutts and Herbert Kilpins. Yeah,
so. John Charles would be the goal-scoring, the British goal-scoring giant.
Oh, the British, yeah.
Yeah, but in English terms, certainly. Yeah, remarkable stuff. And
gentle giant, you know, both Tammy and John Charles. Mm. So,
nice.
Although Tammy did, in the game, you may have seen this... he accidentally trod on Mary Demiral, the Atalanta centre-back. And, you know, Giroud's gash was the worst gash of the weekend. But Demiral had a few of Tammy's studs left on his ankle after the game on Saturday night.
It was the worst-looking tackle since that whack-in photo. Probably. Anyway, next up for Roma... What have we got as they continue to chase? I'm just
Vitesse.
Vitesse are in the Conference League, but in terms of the top four race, 6 points behind Juventus. Do they have a game in hand? No, they haven't. But Atalanta do. Atalanta are also 6 points behind Juve, and they do have a game in hand. There's life left in that one. Lazio also just a point behind Roma. So yeah, all right. Well, plenty of questions still to be resolved then, as we head into final quarter of the season around Europe. That wraps it up for today's Totally Football Show, though. A hearty thanks for having joined us, listener. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back with further tales of the continent next Tuesday, so do join us for that. For now, from myself, Alvaro, James, Julien, Christoph, producer Charlie, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.